Hello, everyone, and welcome back to The Ambibulous, a show where we discuss a variety of topics about alcohol. From beer styles, the brewing process, distillation and spirits, and even liquor laws, there's a fascinating world to discover. On today's episode, we learn a bit about the ancient beverage of mead. Joining me today is Susan Rood of Fargo, North Dakota's very own Prairie Rose Meadery. I'm your host, Connor Brecky. Let's all raise a glass to the Ambibulous. Welcome back to the show, everybody. Today I'm joined by Susan Rood of Prairie Rose Meadery here in Fargo, North Dakota. Welcome to the show. Thank you so much for having me over.
I'm excited to be here. Thanks for inviting me.
And then we're going to talk about one of our, well, my kind of weaknesses here, mead. I love it. It's a really great beverage. Got a lot of history to it. And yeah, let's have at it. What is mead for the audience?
Well, in its basic sense, mead is fermented honey. So the base of everything is honey. People will call it a honey wine, but where wine is made from grapes or other fruits, mead is the majority of the fermentable honey. And then you'll add some other fruit or spice to change it up, or fruit and spice, or you can do so many things with it.
Yes, and you guys have quite a few different flavors on the menu, but we'll touch on that a bit later here. So it's an old beverage. It's been around for a while.
Yeah, there is probably history of it about a little over 9,000 years ago in the pyramids. And then there's conjectural history of it about 40,000 years ago in Africa. So yeah, very old.
Because I was just looking at some pictures and there's pottery that dates back from at least 7,000 BCE in China. So kind of like the proto mead. I mean, it's a bit different back then, but...
Right. Well, originally they would have made it probably. I mean, they're using natural yeasts, and so it might have been a little more sour than ours. It would have been, it would have taken local fruits and spices and stuff and thrown it all into a container along with whatever honey they could find. They would have done that. Probably initially it was originally found by a beehive getting, tree splitting open or water getting in somehow. And they came along and, oh, hey, let's try this. And, ooh, that tastes good.
So, everybody loves alcohol. That hasn't changed. It's funny how that works, because same thing with all alcoholic beverages. It's all of a sudden something happens, some liquid fruit juice or something is left out, then it just gets fermented, and then some brave soul comes by and takes a sip of it. But, you know, that's where we are now. That's how we got what we got.
Yeah, the Vikings would have drank mead before battle, going into battle, after battle. It was the drink of the gods, so they would have thought they were going to heaven to drink mead. There's quite a bit of history there. And then you go past, Vikings would have had it. The English culture had it. It was the drink of the kings and the lords and the clergy. They would have also been the monks. So there's a lot of history there that is probably more well known. But you go to almost any country in the world and you will find some information about honey drinks all down through the ages.
Right. I have an interesting thing here about Hindi texts, the mead or soma, right around, 1700 BCE-ish. And then, again, back to the Norse mythology, Kvasir, kind of a godlike being who basically had mead pottery created from his blood. So, you know, you're drinking something like that. It's like, yeah, mead's pretty important. It was the preferred beverage in the golden age of Greek civilization as well. Mm-hmm. And then the epic poem that I think most people remember, that movie from 10 years ago, Beowulf, it was featured in the original English epic poem, not so much in the movie. So we've gone through a bit of a history of mead, a little folklore, but now we're going to get into how it's produced. So it's fermented honey and water, essentially. How similar to making beer is it?
Other than the fact that you have a beverage or the liquid that you add yeast to, not quite too much like beer. Beer, you have to heat the grains to a certain temperature to make the enzymes work. With honey, you just dilute the honey. You don't even need to heat it up. You want to make sure your honey is in a liquid stage, so it'll mix in well with your water. But this can, you know, probably 80, 90 degrees, and it'll mix well. But you just mix your honey and your water, and you throw in a little bit of nutrient to feed the yeast. Throw your yeast in and let it ferment. That's pretty much basic. Whereas beer, you will heat your grains to 100, and, you know, if you want a protein rest, you want a mash, you know, you want that 150 to get all of the starch or the enzymes, the starches turned into sugars. And then you've got to mash out. And yeah, there's a lot more time and energy goes into making beer, and it ferments quickly. Beer does. Yeast takes a little bit longer, probably several weeks to ferment out, whereas beer is done in 5 days.
So with the fermentation process, you need to use a yeast of some sort.
Yes.
Are there different specific mead yeasts, or do you use like wine yeasts, or what kind of?
There are some specific mead yeasts. I actually do use a wine yeast. I just like that better. There are several wine yeasts out there that are recommended.
Just depends on what you feel like making.
Yeah. Well, and it depends on your system. There's some wine yeasts that are better for hotter fermentations, so they won't put off as much of the higher alcohols. Whereas our system here, we use a cooler fermentation. It's just the yeast I've been used to for many years. So,
and then to determine, you know, how potent your drink is, that's usually measured with specific gravity.
Yeah, or Brix.
What is racking a product?
Racking a product just means that you're going from one tank into another tank, or one container into another container. Usually you'll finish most of your fermentation, you will rack it or transfer it into another container to let the yeast that's settled in the bottom stay, and it just helps clear it faster.
Is cloudy mead necessarily a bad thing?
Not necessarily. For presentation, many people prefer it crystal clear. Sometimes you start out with it crystal clear, and then just especially your fruit ones. I've had a little bit of an issue with a few of them, not all of them. Most of mine stay crystal clear. I do filter everything down to 0.45 microns, but that does still leave a little bit of pectin in there, and sometimes that'll settle out. So if you got one of my meads with a little bit of cloudiness in it, it's probably a pectin haze, which doesn't really change the flavor. It just doesn't look quite as bright and exciting. But in today's new world, you go from your beers that used to have to be crystal clear also to excessively hazy beers that actually have almost a thick mouth feel from the yeast and haze in them. So I don't think it's a bad thing.
Just depends on what you want to make.
Yep.
And then how long does the fermentation process take?
I know some of the mead makers are getting them done in 10 days, but I think they have better equipment than I do. Centrifuge to clarify or to clear them faster. About 4 weeks, I can have my traditional mead made. A little over. A lot of them with the fruit in take me about 10 to 12 weeks, but it just varies. When it's done, it's done.
Do you age mead at all?
I haven't aged mine. When I used to homebrew, it took 6 months to a year, so they were aged before. We do have some in, here in oak barrels that were aging a little bit. So those will be aged. But otherwise, no, as soon as I said, within 4 to 12 weeks, ours are bottled and ready for sale.
But now mead, like anything, has different varieties. Are there any, like a traditional mead, that's like your baseline mead. Are there any varieties that you enjoy more?
Traditional mead is just honey, but if you've had one traditional mead, you haven't had all traditional meads. Because right. Every single honey will give you a different, you know, like clover honey is different from orange blossom honey, is different from Ethiopian honey, or you know, every floral source is totally different and will give you a totally different flavor. And they're all very good, I think. They're just going to be different. Then from there, you can have dry, medium, or sweet. So the same clover honey made might be fermented dry, it might be fermented semi-sweet, or it might be fermented very sweet. That makes it a totally different flavor. Then you have your malomils, which are fruit meads. You have your metheglins, which are spice meads. You have, and all of those can be, how many million fruits are, not a million, right, but very, very many fruits, very many spices. And then you can combine each of those fruits with different spices. So you have a fruit and spice mead. There's such a huge variety of possibilities with mead that I really couldn't find one that's just my favorite. I like them all.
And from what I've had, I definitely like them all too. Yeah, it was kind of a tricky way to ask that question because I'm so used to like the beer world, because I know that, like you said, it depends on the bee, it depends on the flower, it depends on the fruit, it depends on the yeast. There's so many factors in there on what kind of mead is. Wine, in the wine world, there's such thing as an ice wine. Is there kind of a similar thing with mead? Can you get that when you freeze mead?
You can. I've done that. not as a professional, but at home, I froze some meads and concentrated them. They do get much more like a liqueur. It's kind of fun to try that. But you got to get them very, very cold. So you got to do that because mead is, a little bit higher alcohol. So you've got to do it more like when it's 20 below outside.
Which usually isn't a problem for this, for this area. Part,
yeah, you've got about a couple of weeks in the January, early February.
Got your built-in freezer right outside.
Yeah. But you can also ferment using particular yeasts. You can ferment up to 20-25% alcohol just by feeding your yeast properly also. So
now, as far as serving and enjoying mead, are there special types of glassware that you need to use, or anything for people who've never had mead, how to approach it?
I do personally prefer to drink first out of glass. I hate drinking out of any plastic or any of that stuff, but that's a personal preference. But I do prefer them more out of a bellowed, I guess, or wine type glass that comes in at the top, because your aromas come out nicer. Mm-hmm. There isn't at the moment yet, the mead world is working on it, having a specific mead glass.
Okay.
But then there's so many different meads. With so many different meads, it's hard to pick one glass that works absolutely perfect for all of them. So,
because in the wine world, there's like a million different types of glass.
Right. They've got a white wine glass. And then even in the white wine world, you've got a Chardonnay glass and you've got a Sauvignon glass. And so eventually I think we will have more glasses that are more mead specific, or at least type specific of mead.
Because even though it's mead, it still has as many characteristics and flavors and all kinds of different nuances to it, just like wine. It's
more so than wine. I'm fairly certain there's way more mead varieties compared to than wine varieties.
Well, that's why we do this show, so I can help people understand and explore different types of things. Well, we learned a little bit of history about mead today, kind of a general overview. So once again, I'd like to thank you, Susan, for coming on the show.
You're welcome.
Always fun to have a new guest and a new expertise. So stay tuned, because we'll be having another episode on where you can try some North Dakota mead. So until next time.
Cheers.
Cheers. The Ambibulous is made possible with Castos, giving creators the tools to connect with their audience and community. The music is courteous of Pond 5, with over 25 million royalty-free stock videos, music, photos, and sound effects. There's something for every creator. Today's episode was recorded at Prairie Rose Meadery here in Fargo, North Dakota. I'd like to thank Susan for her time and the use of this facility to make this episode possible. For the latest updates, videos, photos, and web links to our guests, please consider checking out our Facebook page, The Ambibulous Podcast. And of course, a big thank you to all our listeners. Thank you for all of your support. Until next time, cheers.